First Thessalonians 2 verses 1 and 12. You yourselves know, brothers and sisters, that our coming to you was not in vain. But though we had already suffered and been shamefully mistreated in Philippi, as you know, we had courage in our God to declare to you the gospel of God in spite of great opposition. For our appeal does not spring from deceit or impure motives or trickery, but just as we have been approved by God to be entrusted with the message of the gospel, even so we speak, not to please mortals, but to please God who tests our hearts. As you know, and as God is our witness, we never came with words of flattery or with a pretext for greed. Nor did we seek praise from mortals, whether from you or from others. Though we might have made demands as apostles of Christ, but we were gentle among you, like a nurse tenderly caring for her own children. So deeply do we care for you that we are determined to share with you not only the gospel of God, but also our own selves, because you have become very dear to us. You remember our labor and toil, brothers and sisters. We worked night and day so that we might not burden any of you while we proclaimed to you the gospel of God. You are witnesses, and God also, how pure, upright, and blameless our conduct was toward you. As you know, we dealt with each one of you like a father with his children, urging and encouraging you and pleading that you live a life worthy of God who calls you into his own kingdom and glory. This is the word.
Thanks be to God. Thank you, Mary Lou. Daniel Boone is a character in American history that you might even think he was a legend, but he was real life. Long before a TV series and a coonskin cap craze, which apparently he never actually wore, there was a real Daniel Boone. He was competent in many fields, but he's remembered for his prodigious skills as a frontiersman. In the decades around the American Revolution, he opened a path to what were then considered the Western lands, beyond the Appalachian Mountains. Before the end of the 1700s, more than 200,000 Americans had migrated to Kentucky and Virginia by following the Cumberland Gap route, first marked by Daniel Boone. Now, it doesn't seem that he ever told false stories about himself. He did seem to share the human tendency to minimize our vulnerabilities. He was famous for his exploratory expeditions, so once somebody asked him if he'd ever gotten lost. His famous reply, "I can't say I was ever lost, but I was a mite bewildered for 3 days." Oh, the lengths we go to deny our frailty. Sometimes I think we haven't progressed past that stage as early adolescents when we couldn't admit to any weakness, any vulnerability, or lack of necessary knowledge. Oh, I know, I'm just waiting to see if you know. Because we're afraid of being taken advantage of and attacked at our weakest points. One indication of vulnerability is aging. None of you, mind you, but I'm talking about other people. As much as cosmetics are a multi-billion dollar industry in our country, and of course around the world, the portion of the market that helps men pretend they aren't aging is growing much faster than the part aimed at women. We equate being young with being strong, so we want to give that impression. I was going to say illusion. Curiously, in some other cultures, very true in Eastern Africa, to be older is to be treated with honor and respect. There they understand that wisdom comes with experience. And this resistance to admitting our vulnerability also has some very serious spiritual consequences and implications. My college roommate, Fred, and I used to have frank conversations about the Christian faith. He called himself an atheist, yet we could discuss at length and be kind to each other in the process. And a few years after we'd graduated, when I was in seminary, I was given an assignment to ask some non-believing friends to explain what they understood, what certain Christian terms meant. In particular, what do they think it meant to be born again? Fred had moved to Maine, so I wrote him a letter. Some of you remember letters. And I know that some, not all, but some celebrities who call themselves born again may not have done the cause of Christ a favor. But all in all, I love the term. I love it. I needed a new start, and the Lord gave me one. I was curious what Fred would say. And his response was informed. He said he understood being born again to require the new believer to say that he or she could not succeed without God. That God had given him or her a new start. I'm thinking, you're right, great. I was hopeful. But then he said, but I refuse to ever admit that I need outside help. Oh. Really, that made me sad. He was inflexible about something that would make a difference that is literally out of this world. Now, I'm not sure there's a place where minimizing our vulnerability is stronger felt than in Eastern Massachusetts. We lie, cheat, steal, and segregate, but apparently God isn't asking any of us to change. And how I appreciate the honesty of those who've taken a good look at the man or woman in the mirror and said, I have to change or I will die. And in fact, among those who are in recovery from an addiction, one of the strongest indicators of the success of their recovery is the pursuit of authentic fellowship with others in their recovery. The fellowship of fellow strugglers. Very helpful. The reason why recovering addicts can be so devoted to their 12-step group, they found something that we all need. A searching moral inventory reveals that we all fall short. We all need people who understand the struggles we face, who are open with their own struggles, to whom we can mutually commit to support, encourage, defend, and speak the truth in love. Some of our falling short is simply that we can't do enough. We're mortal. Now, if you've lived your life nervously pretending to have it all together, how freeing it is to live in a family where we can be honest about our real situation. And this is why small groups are so important. In a small group, you can have deep and open conversation with just a few others. Trust flourishes, real help is available. Several of our small groups are opening to having others. I know Carol's group on Wednesday mornings, mine Friday mornings, have some availability. We're also interested in seeing a new group start. So keep your eyes open for that. Human weakness shows in many ways. There's physical weakness, where our bodies give out and fail to handle the threats that come our way. Whether it's a hostile environment or a physical illness. At the Ash Wednesday service this past week, our host pastor, Sung Moon Ahn, was dealing with some allergies. And he said, I get this every year. I know these days when you see an Asian with a drippy nose, you get nervous. I promise you this is not the coronavirus. We are unable on our own to handle the threats come our way. Beyond physical weakness, though, there is also moral weakness. We think about having to explain ourselves to God at the end of our earthly journey, and we get nervous. After all, there is also that problem of sloth, where for many of us, we have to ruefully admit we have not done the good that we should have and could have done. Now, there's the bad news. The scriptures for today offer quite a bit of hope. They teach us the comfort of the presence of God. First, we read the 121st Psalm together. The worship team helped us hear it again in our prayer song. I often read this psalm at funerals, precisely because it so beautifully reminds us of God's eternal vigilance. The psalmist is on a journey in the desert. All around him are threats bigger than he is. But God is the one who brings help. God will never be caught off guard. He's watching over Israel. God watching over his people, including Christians grafted into the people of God. That's God, never slumbers, never sleeps. He is always watching over you. Our God is eternally vigilant. You know, often I go to the first reading. Today it's from 1 Thessalonians, before the sermon text. But I want to take it to the Gospel of John now. John 9, 1 to 11. As Jesus walked along, he saw a man blind from birth. His disciples asked him, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" And Jesus answered, "Neither this man nor his parents sinned. He was born blind so that God's work might be revealed in him. We must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. Night is coming when no one can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world." And when he had said this, he spat on the ground and made a mud with the saliva and spread the mud on the man's eyes and saying to him, "Go wash in the pool of Siloam," which means sent. Then he went and washed and came back able to see. The neighbors and those who had seen him before as a beggar began to ask, "Is this not the man who used to sit and beg?" And some were saying, "It is he." Others were saying, "No, but it's someone like him." He kept saying, "I am the man." But they kept asking him, "Then how were your eyes opened?" He answered, "The man called Jesus made mud, spread it on my eyes, and said to me, 'Go to Siloam and wash.' Then I went and washed and received my sight." That ends there. "And received my sight." I'm drawn to two verses in this passage. First, Jesus says, "I must do what I was sent for while it is the day. The night is coming when no one is able to work." You know, we know from the creeds that Jesus is at the right hand of the Father. It's not a stretch to say he's the Father's right-hand man. As the agent of the God who never sleeps, Jesus understood that the work assigned to him was not optional. So we find him faithfully caring even for those who were not in a position to do him any favors. We don't need a bargaining chip when we come to God. The reality is that you and I are among those who can't do him any favors. Jesus could get by quite well without any of us, except that he loves you and wants you to be part of his family. Love motivates his diligence. The second verse I want to highlight here is where we are told that Jesus makes a clay out of mud and his spittle. And first of all, we're reminded how Genesis describes the human race as being shaped from clay, the fundamental material of the earth. Biology teaches us the building blocks of our physical life are the same as the rest of earth, other lives on earth. But Jesus takes that clay, and literally the text says he christens or anoints the man's eyes. Jesus is the unique Christ or Messiah, anointed one. But the humble Son of Man shares his glory with ordinary people. He is not only generous, he's not only diligent, he is generous. So Jesus must be about the work he was sent for. And that work saves us time and time again, and we can rely on it. And relying on the love of God, there's a good story written by a fellow named Tim Hansel about his, one time while my son Zach and I were in the country, he wrote, climbing around in some cliffs, I heard a voice from above yell, "Hey Dad, catch me!" I turned around to see Zach joyfully jumping off a rock straight at me. He had jumped and then yelled, "Hey Dad." Instantly, I became a circus act. catching him. We both fell to the ground. For a moment after I caught him, I could hardly talk. And when I found my voice again, I gasped in exasperation. "Zach, can you give me one good reason why you did that?" And he replied with remarkable calmness, "Sure, because you're my dad." His whole assurance, Tim writes, was based in the fact that his father was trustworthy. He could live life to the hilt because I could be trusted. Isn't this even more true for a Christian? You can live your life to the hilt because God is generous. I am very grateful for the 5 years of ministry we've had at All American Assisted Living. There was certainly an uptick of attendance when the good folk there discovered they could look forward to hearing the magic fingers of David McPherson on the banjo. One of the songs that we enjoyed playing and singing with the people there is the gospel classic, "Just a Closer Walk with Thee." I am weak, but Thou art strong. Jesus, keep me from all wrong. Don't leave me alone. I'll be satisfied as long as I walk. Let me walk close to Thee. Let me walk close to Thee. It's a prayer. What is good to know about that prayer for a closer walk is that it is precisely the Lord's will for us. At the very end of his earthly ministry, after he had risen from the grave, Jesus came to his disciples and said, "All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Therefore, go make disciples from among all the ethnic groups of the world." And then he ended, "Surely I am with you always, to the very end of the age." Walking close, always. No matter what you are going through, take comfort in the presence of the ever-vigilant God. There's so much assurance for us in these verses. Not only do we know that the enemy of our soul will never catch our protecting God napping, we can also rest assured that some of the work the Lord is vigilantly doing in us, that he's doing, is work in us, transforming us. And we saw that in the Thessalonian reading that Mary Lou gave us. Paul is the author, and he grew up most of the time being called Saul. That was his Jewish name. But Paul was his Roman name, and later, as Paul spent more of his time among the Gentiles of the Roman Empire, he used that name more often. But he grew up with, you might say, a kosher spoon in his mouth, the wonder kid of his synagogue. And he'd begun to believe he was something special. But God softened Paul's arrogant heart. He changed his heart. Instead of persecuting Christians, which Jesus took personally, Paul found himself transformed. He became the servant of the very folk he had once sought to arrest and eradicate. I was telling Keith Myers, who's begun teaching a course on Paul's letters to the Thessalonians, that one of the things I love about this church that Paul's writing to is they really function as a church, particularly in their care for each other. There's evidence throughout the letters. One of the reasons they became like that was the example that Paul set for them. They knew that Paul and his ministry partners worked hard and toiled night and day, working toward not being a burden to any among you, as we proclaimed among you the gospel of God. I find that very reassuring, that like Paul, as we grow in Christ-likeness, we are, as Christ's witnesses, given power for devoted work. So you're not in this alone. Our human frailty will fail us, but God never will. One hymn writer for human frailties talked about the arm of flesh. Okay, we're singing again, guys. Here we go. Stand up, Stand up for Jesus. Stand in his strength alone. The arm of flesh will fail you. You dare not trust your own. Put on the gospel armor. Each piece put on with prayer. Where duty calls or danger, be never wanting there. The assurance that Jesus is ever vigilant on our behalf transforms our lives and frees us from all fear. This also affects us by impacting our witness. One of you told me how you shared with a friend the difference that beginning to practice a trusting faith in Jesus Christ had made in your life, has made. And the change was so genuine, as was your testimony to it, that now your friend is coming as well. And as the ever-vigilant, never-slumbering Christ works in us, he makes us able to work in imitation of him. In another place, Paul wrote words that become our own. The voice of God saying to him, "My grace is sufficient for thee. My strength is made perfect in weakness. Most gladly, therefore, will I rather glory in my infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me." We neither should nor need to minimize our vulnerabilities and weaknesses. Because Jesus never slumbers or sleeps. No matter what you're going through, take comfort in the presence of the ever-vigilant God. Let us pray. Oh Lord, thank you for the discipline and the reminder of the Lenten season, where we say less of us and more of you, where we recognize that as we make ourselves available to you, you will do great things in us and through us. So in the song the choir will sing for us, we ask that it become our prayer too, that we make ourselves available to you in this season, repenting of our sin, intentionally pursuing a greater devotion, and living lives in service to you. Hear this, our prayer, for Jesus' sake.